When it comes to comfort eating, our body is trying to send us a message. And that message might be a feeling of sadness, might be anger, might be disappointment, might be fear. If we experience the situations in our childhood that we didn't feel safe, and I'm not talking only about physical safe, it will be the case that our body will be building that safety net until the moment we start doing the work on ourselves and we start feeling safe and secure within ourselves.
Food is the thing that comforts us. But it's also bringing up these big emotions that can come up after we have had that binge with the food. Hi, Anna. Thank you for coming to Therapize. I appreciate you making time and bringing your energy here.
Hi, Larissa. Thank you very much for inviting me. I am very, very excited about our conversation today.
So am I. And I know it's going to relate to so many people. So, Anna, are you able to just give a brief overview of what you do?
Yes, thank you. So my name is Anna Strzeżek. I'm a psychonutritionist and I work with clients who struggle with emotional eating, binge eating, or any type of food addiction. And what I do is I focus on healing their relationship with food. So my clients can start living life free from shame and guilt, because those conversations always bring a lot of shame and guilt around.
So when you talk about healing from the relationship that they have with food, what do you mean? What do you mean by healing?
It's not even healing from the relationship with food. It's healing the relationship with food. Because when we have unhealthy relationship with eating, we might overeat, we might binge eat, we might avoid food, or we might eat pretty regular portions, but it's more about what kind of relationship we have with food in our head. Do we keep beating ourselves up that we ate too much? Or do we keep thinking about how we need to punish ourselves or punish our body because yesterday we ate a little bit too much? So it's also for that situation when we actually eat, but we have no idea why we eat. We almost hear that voice in our head saying, chocolate, chocolate, take me to the shop. I want some chocolate or crisps. Those are two most popular ones. So what I do with my clients is basically just focusing on what's behind, what's underneath that need to eat. Because I keep saying that binge eating or overeating, it's not a problem. Binge eating or overeating is a solution. And we just need to find out what the actual problem is, what our body is trying to tell us by urging us to eat.
And we see that in the therapy space as well, is when people will come to us and they will talk to us about their eating habits. And behind that, there's so much more. So that's the behavior. But underneath the behavior, it's the emotions, it's the thoughts. Is that what you work with? Is that how you support people?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So when it comes to how the work is structured normally, because I created a program called Feed Your Body, Not Your Mind, which is an online group coaching program.
Oh, that's such a powerful name. So that's Feed Your Body, Not Your Mind.
Yes.
Oh,
because
wow.
What I discovered through my own journey, and I'm sure that we will mention this later on, was the fact that for most of the time when we eat because we feel particular emotions, but we have no idea that we are feeling those emotions, we are actually feeding our mind. We are not feeding our body, because the way, especially when we eat emotionally or when we binge eat, we focus on processed food or on something what can give us really, really quick gratification. And then we definitely don't feed our bodies, because our bodies can be only fed when there is nutrition. And for most of the times, there is no nutrition in those products.
So, and I wonder if you gave that question to a group of people, just like random people, how many people would relate to, do they actually feed their body or do they feed their mind? Because it's so powerful. That's just grabbed me. It's grabbed my attention.
No, thank you. And you know, when I ask that question, or when I talk to people about the program, a lot of people actually react as you react, because it's like, oh wow, I never actually thought about that I'm not feeding my body. I'm feeding my emotions. I'm feeding my feelings, or you know, my moods. We can call it however we want. And And it's also the big part of that conversation is asking ourselves, you know, if we want to eat something, or if we like to eat something, or if we think that we like something. And if we think that we like something, then okay, so...
What do you mean if we think we like something?
It's that was something what was a big breakthrough for me when I started my healing journey, because just to mention, for 25 years I struggled with binge eating disorder and non-purging bulimia. And when I started working with my psychonutritionist, I remember that it was such a massive revolution for me to find out that after years of yo-yo dieting and being between 120 kilograms and 75 kilograms, I realized that, OMG, it's not about food. It's not about what I do. It's not about what I eat, how I eat. It's about the mindset behind, and it's about the connection between what is happening in my life and how I react to it by food, but eating food. And yes, within the first 2 weeks, I literally had that revelation that most of the things which I was eating, I was told that I should be eating this or I shouldn't be eating that. So I realized that being surrounded by the dieting industry for so many years, there was so much information. It's not about knowledge. There was so much information that at some point I just didn't know what was right, what was wrong. So I just took it for granted. And I remember that journey. It was literally the 2 weeks. It was 4.5 years ago. For 2 weeks, every time when I was eating something, I was just asking myself, okay, so do you like those carrots or do you think that you like them? And the reason why I started doing this is a simple fact that I convinced myself that for 10 years I didn't eat bananas because I just said to myself that they've got too much sugar. And as a paradox, I was binging on a lot of chocolate and a lot of ice cream and everything else. But this is how thinking versus liking something worked for me. And it was incredible because all of a sudden I started uncovering those narratives which I had about food.
It's interesting as well, isn't it? Because when you're saying that, it's almost like we're told things from people that we know, from the TV, from society. We're told these things like, oh, okay, bananas aren't good for you, or this isn't right for you, or don't eat this, or don't have too much of this. But each and every one of us, we all have a different relationship with food and our bodies are all very different. So do you work with someone's body and where they're at, or do you feel like one size fits all?
Definitely the first one. I work with...
I'm so glad you said that.
If I said the second one, probably I wouldn't be sitting here.
It's so. End.
It's like, yeah, okay, we're done. Goodbye. You know what? For me, the way our bodies looks in terms of size or in terms of shape, it's just a mirror reflection of what's happening in our subconscious mind, how we really feel. So the reality is that I just keep saying to my clients that, okay, let's do what we can do with what you have now. Let's learn what is happening inside. Let's have a look at the mindset, what is really going on in your life and in your head. And then you will see that the body will follow, because some of the narratives which we are uncovering throughout my work with clients, sometimes just being aware of our belief, which we had for most of our life, is enough for our body to start changing or to stop growing.
Sometimes. Anna, do you think there's a common thing that goes on behind the scenes? Like, do you feel like there's a similar sort of issue that's going on behind the scenes that people, or why people struggle with food, their relationship with food?
Yes, in my opinion, from my personal experience and from studying and from experience with clients, it's the self-worth. Self-worth is one of the main, not problems, but the main reasons why we struggle with eating. If we don't believe in ourselves, If we constantly feel that we need to over justify, over explain, overthink, overdo, we will also overeat, because it goes together. We try to compensate for that. I'm not good enough. There is some, and of course, most of this is subconscious. It's not conscious, or it's hidden from our view. So there is a lack. I'm not good enough. So let me just compensate for that in a form of what I just mentioned, overdoing, overachieving, from your perspective as well, from your work. And overeating is one of those things, because we just put too much pressure. And we are humans. There is a limited amount of energy we can have every day. And if we spend the whole day trying to prove to everyone that we are good enough, or trying to prove to anyone that, okay, everything what we are doing is great, then after the whole day like that, we just don't have enough mental energy to look after ourselves, especially if we binge it in secret. And this is something what was the personal story of mine and the number of my clients, because the thing is that if we don't want to show others that we struggle with emotional eating, or we eat some processed foods, or we love chocolate, etc., etc., if we try to hide that, our mind will be constantly scanning the environment just to make sure that no one sees us.
And is that about shame? Terrible. Is that about, like, what? Why is it that we're trying to hide? Like, we don't want people to see what we're eating. Like, what? Where does that come from?
It's a fear of judgment. Definitely, it starts with the fear of judgment, and when we are afraid of being judged, most commonly we are judging ourselves. And where the judgment is coming from is the putting the labels, and especially on food. This is one of the first things which I do with my clients. I keep saying to them, there is no such a thing as good and bad food, or right and wrong food. Because the moment we put label on something or someone, our mind literally puts a definition on it. And every time when we go back to the conversation about food, every time when we eat a little bit of bad food, then we judge ourselves as bad people. So if we are doing something like that, then it's like, oh my goodness, I'm such a bad person. So, okay, it's already too late. I'm already ashamed of myself. So let me eat a little bit more so I can soothe myself with chocolate, which is just an illusion, because when we eat chocolate, we get a little bit of dopamine in our brain. The receptors in our brain are numbed for a moment because of the sugar. And I've got nothing against sugar, just to say that. But that's what happens. We feel like, oh, okay, for a moment, I feel a little bit better. But the reality is that we don't feel better. We just feel that shame a little bit less intense.
Or
we
it's feel interesting, that isn't it? Because like what I also hear is food is the thing that comforts us. But yet it's also like in some ways not our enemy, but it's also bringing up these big emotions that can come up after we have had that binge with the food. And I wonder like how you help people with that.
I absolutely agree with what you said, that, you know, it's the one of the roles of food. Food has a lot of different roles. And one of the roles is to comfort us, because, you know, when we are newborns, the first thing which we get is we are being fed by our mothers, or it might be the bottle, but it's milk. It's the taste of a mixture, or actually the taste of milk is a mixture of something really sweet and something really fatty. So our brain is programmed to link that taste to safety, security, comfort, love, understanding, and everything what brings, and I've got goosebumps now, because all of this just brings those good feelings. And there is no wonder
that meets our basic needs as well, like you've just said, like it goes straight back into Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and there it all is connected.
100%. And that's the reason why when we feel uncomfortable, or when we feel challenged, or where we feel, especially when we feel sad or when we feel lonely, our mind just goes to food, because it's we yawn that connection, we yawn that belonging. It's almost like a sense of belonging. Plus, we all know that scene from American movies where someone splits up, or a girl splits up with her boyfriends, and all of a sudden they're her girlfriends and a tub of ice cream, because this is where our mind goes. So chocolate, ice cream, cakes, like chocolatey cakes, this is where we go straight away.
Yeah, because what would be an alternative to that? Like, say, I don't know, say if one of my girlfriends, they're like, oh, this has happened. Instead of taking ice cream, what else could I take as an alternative that could replace that?
Oh, this is a brilliant question. Thank you for asking it, because, you know, it's a great question, especially because it's a Valentine's week. And I've been talking a lot about connection between food and love languages. And we do it so often because it's embedded in our minds because of different cultures as well, that when we go to visit someone, we bring food. When we want to celebrate something, we bring food. When we want to comfort someone, we bring food as well. And the best option would be, in this particular case, would be just being for that person and listening to that person and letting that person actually release those emotions, or just talk about everything. Because what we basically do, and I love to give that example, that when it comes to comfort eating, our body is trying to send us a message. And that message might be a feeling of sadness, might be anger, might be disappointment, might be fear. You can talk about different emotions, the basic ones and the more complex ones. And hunger is the messenger. And it's every time when we eat, it almost feels like we are shooting the messenger, because we will never get to the actual message. So it might be in situations like that, when someone is the situation, you know, when someone is in the moment when they just suffer because something painful happened, it's definitely a mixture of disappointment, sadness, anger. And there is so many different emotions that it's really hard to, first of all, be able to recognize them. Because we are living in the times when, okay, now self-development, self-growth, mindset, and those kind of trends are very popular. And I consider myself lucky, and I'm sure that you will consider yourself the fortunate as well, because it feels like we're in a bubble, that conversations about emotions, conversations about, you know, how we feel, self-growth, etc. This is something what we can have at least with some of our friends or our partners or members of our family. But a few years ago, I had no idea how to deal with anger or how to recognize anger and sadness, because it's so natural for all of us. And again, I was the example of that mixture and that confusion, that because I suppressed a lot of sadness, we were all told that, you know, you can't cry in public, because if you cry in public, then it means that you are weak, etc., etc. Or you can't shout in public, because then, you know, people will think that you are a bad person. So sometimes anger and sadness get a little bit confused. And in a lot of situations when we feel sad, before we start learning to recognize the emotions, when we feel sad, the first reaction is anger, because this is the coping mechanism. And in a lot of situations, we just feel sadness, and then we feel like, okay, something is happening, I don't feel comfortable, so let me eat something. And then when we eat, we actually get angry at ourselves, because it's like, oh, I promised myself, you know, 10 times this week already that I won't be eating chocolate, or I won't be eating this. And we eat something, not because we are weak, but because we just don't know how to recognize what is actually happening underneath.
So how do we break that cycle? If there's someone listening and they know that they're sort of in this cycle, how do you go about breaking that?
I would definitely ask a question, how do I really feel? And I know that asking a question like that might be brought to the surface. But if anyone is listening, I would definitely give some most popular examples, or most common examples of the emotions which we try to eat. Eating emotions is a funny phrase which I like to use.
I really like that. So, the emotions that we try to eat.
Yes. Or sometimes emotions are trying to eat us. That was this is a translation from Polish, indirect translation. So yeah,
that's really interesting as well. That's grabbed my attention as well, because that's what you're visualizing, isn't it? You're visualizing you've got these emotions going on. You don't know what to do with them, and it's almost like food becomes that comfort, but the avoider, and there's so many different hats that the food then holds for us. So yeah, sorry, you were going to give an example.
No, absolutely. And I really agree with that. And in Polish, we've got saying that it's shame, that shame is eating you. And you've eaten so much shame. So if you feel ashamed of because of something, we would say, and it makes no sense in English, but it's almost like, oh, I've eaten so much shame. So I'm almost like consumed that emotion by that emotion.
But it makes sense. It does make sense.
It really does. And it's with anger as well. When we feel, it almost feels like anger is eating us, because it's like we are the whole anger. But anyway, just to give the example, a great example of eating in the evening. A lot of us.
How many people that are listening here, hands up, like I'm one of them. It's when in the evenings, it's like, oh yeah, okay. And it's when you're craving that. So yeah, anyway, carry on.
100%. So if something like that happens to anyone who's listening now, the most common reasons why we eat in the evening is tiredness. We are tired, and literally our body is telling us, I'm tired, I'm shutting down, I really want to go to bed. But if we feel that our energy is low, our brain would straight away go to, like, from biological perspective, okay, I need some energy. What is the quickest way to get energy? Get some food. And sugar is the one which will give us a little bit of a kick, a little bit of a boost. So then we will feel a little bit more alive. Only for a moment, because then we will go down. But definitely, if we are tired in the evening and we can't see it, but we feel really hungry in the evening after eating dinner, then it means that, our body is just asking us to go to bed or have a rest. The second reason is boredom. And we do a lot of snacking actually during the day because of boredom as well. It's like we don't know what to do. We are scrolling our phone and it's kind of boring, so we just keep snacking. Or in the evening, we might be sitting in front of the TV or in front of the laptop or watching something, and we are a little bit bored. So we just eat just to keep ourselves entertained. And the third one, most common, is loneliness. We just feel lonely, and it doesn't have to be the situation that we are on our own, but it might be the situation that we are with a partner, with family, or with friends, but we don't feel understood, we don't feel heard, or we don't feel seen, and then we will be craving food. And when it comes to the situations, a lot of parents I work with, they say to me that they've got massive cravings in the evenings when kids go to bed. And it's literally, they've got that time at 10 o'clock in the evening or 9 o'clock or 11 o'clock in the evening where it's like, oh, it's just me. Okay, it's so quiet. So what shall I do now? And then it's literally, I deserve some kind, it almost feels like I deserve some kind of reward. And then they just go to food. But quite often it happens because they feel that their needs are not met, because they've been looking after everyone else. They have not been looking after themselves. And then the body is almost like, I like to give that example of the Inside Out, the cartoon about emotions, that every time when we feel urge to binge, it's all the emotions pressing the buttons on that console, because that's basically what is happening. Is body is trying to say, okay, I'm here, please pay attention to me. I'm trying to tell you something, but because it's so uncomfortable, we would rather just eat something and literally suppress it a little bit lower.
Which makes complete sense. It really does. I actually watched Inside Out for the first time last year and I was fascinated by it. I thought it was such a brilliant film and I've just recommended it to so many people. So when you've just said that now, for me, I can imagine that happening where your needs aren't being met and it's finally you get that space. And your brain's just like, okay, now what do I do? I finally got this. And it's just trying to get that button. But if we are more aware of them emotions, or if we're more aware of what's pressing this button, does that help us?
Yes, definitely does. Because you know what? One of my favorite sayings is, where there is judgment, there is no understanding. So every time when we understand why someone is doing something or why we are doing something, then we are not judging. The moment we stop judging, levels of shame and levels of guilt go down because it's, okay, now I get it why I've been doing this. So there is no point of being ashamed of that. I just didn't know how to do better. And that's also a big part and big reason why I'm a massive fan of group coaching, because the moment when you come to the group, and it might be the case that you've been struggling with binge eating or emotional eating, and we'll talk about the differences in a minute as well. You've been struggling with this for 2 months, 2 years, or 2 decades, and you've never spoken to anyone about it. And all of a sudden you come to the group where you've got 10, 20, 30 people and every single person resonates with what you are saying. Then there is that moment when it's like, oh, wow. So I'm not on my own. I'm not the only person who doesn't have it figured out.
I think a lot of people think that, though. A lot of people feel that when they hear other people be vulnerable, they'll say, "I thought I was the only one who does that," or "I thought I was the only one who thinks like that." And that's why people hide it. Like they hide it away and they try and hide or suppress that part of them away. And in the end, it comes out in other ways, in other forms, through stress, anxiety, low mood. We see it through binge eating, emotional eating. And that takes me nicely to the next question. What's the difference between binge eating and emotional eating? Because we've used both, but what is the difference?
Yes, and I'm loving this question. It's a great one. So thank you for asking it. So emotional eating is something what we all have and we all do. Because just to give a great example, if there is a birthday party and we are going out with our friends or family and we enjoy food and we know that sometimes we might be almost full, but then it's a brilliant dessert or any kind of additional meal. And we are like, oh, I really feel that I want to try it or I want to eat it. So we will eat it because it brings us all those good feelings. It brings us the connection with others. It can help us to bond with others as well. That's why love languages are and food that conversation is really really close. And when it comes to emotional eating, we've got the whole scale of emotional eating. So it might be that part of the scale or that end of the scale is that from time to time, I have a little bit of my favorite chocolate or my favorite dessert. I've been talking a lot about chocolate. So let's say I'm going to have my favorite dessert. I'm going to enjoy it. And it's absolutely fine because it's a part of our living. And then that scale will be going a little bit here when we feel a little bit more guilty or a little bit more shame. And on that spectrum of the scale is every time when we feel any kind of emotion and we can't deal with it, we eat and we basically punish ourselves or always hurt ourselves with all that internal talk, which we do. And then when it comes to binge eating is the type of emotional eating when we eat, but we know that we are not hungry and we are eating much more than what we would be normally eating. So binge eating is overeating with that with that feeling of urge that something is telling us that we have to eat. And it doesn't matter if it's, 10 bars of chocolate or if it's just 2 pieces of chocolate. If we have that voice in our head saying, you have to eat it, you have to eat it. It's like you can't focus on anything else because you keep thinking about that food. Then it means that, okay, this is binge eating and, it's getting out of control. That's the good distinction as well. Because
no, that's really helpful to hear the difference, because we use binge and we use emotional eating, and often I hear is like, no, but I'm just an emotional eater. There's nothing like, not everyone's an emotional eater, but that's not the case by what you're saying.
Yeah, because the thing is that we all emotionally eat, but it's not a problem for all of us, and there is no shame in saying, okay, I do emotionally eat. But I'm absolutely aware of that, because awareness here is a big part. If you have a bad day and you are finishing work and you are thinking, okay, today definitely wasn't my favorite day. I'm going to have pizza for dinner and then eat 3 portions of ice cream. And you are planning this and you are eating. Again, I'm not saying that there is something wrong with pizza or with ice cream, but this is much bigger meal than what you would normally have. And then you are eating this and you feel absolutely fine after that. And it's like, okay, I planned it. Tomorrow I'm going back on track. Then that's just okay. That's emotional eating. You are aware of the fact that you ate more what you would normally have, but you are absolutely fine with that. But if you have exactly the same scenario that you've got a bad day and on the way home you buy the same pizza and you buy ice cream and you keep eating it and thinking, I shouldn't be doing this. I shouldn't be doing this. Why am I doing this? I am so terrible. There is no hope for me. I will have to go to the gym tomorrow. And all the other thoughts, then this is binge eating. And this is when we are basically harming each other, harming ourselves, because we are not doing anything good.
Yeah. And you said that you've also been through your own journey of binge eating. Is this something that you've experienced, these symptoms?
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely. And when it comes to my journey, it was pretty. I had a number of years with a lot of let's call it intense episodes of binge eating. And so, what I mean by that, you might have experienced, and I'm someone who's listening. You might have experienced the moments when you think, okay, from tomorrow I'm going to be on a diet, or from tomorrow I'm not going to eat particular things, or I'm going to eat very clean. So today is the day. Today I'm going to eat as much as I can, as many different foods as I can. It's actually called the Last Supper syndrome. And it happens to anyone who will be starting with some restrictions from next day, from Monday, from the first of the month. And what happens in those moments of the Last Supper syndrome, we just eat a lot. And I had moments in my life when I had Last Supper syndrome daily for 3 or 4 months. And to the degree that sometimes it was, it might be, for me, it was definitely ice cream, chocolate, crisps, and peanut butter.
So what's the intention of that? What's the intention of the Last Supper? Like what's going on in the mind?
Eat as much as possible, because from tomorrow it will be forbidden. So it's having that, it's a massive paradox. And thank you for asking this question, because no one ever asked me that question. It's that freedom in being in food prison, if it makes sense, because you know that you are in that food prison, that you can only focus on that and your thoughts are surrounded on that. But for those, for that hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, you give yourself permission to eat as much as you want. And it almost feels like, wow, but only for the first 10 or 15 minutes. Then you just feel terrible. And it almost feels like you eat really fast because you don't want the shame and guilt hit you. It's almost like you want to run away from shame and guilt, but you can't, because you feel really bad straight away. And then the vicious circle of shame and guilt in this case, or the vicious circle of dieting, is the fact that when shame and guilt hits, you feel really low. And then, and you know it from your practice as well, when you want to feel better, then you just eat something because it gives you a dopamine hit, it gives you a little bit of serotonin, and it's like, whoa, I'm feeling better. And then sometimes within nanoseconds, you just feel bad again, and it goes like that. And that's also one of the reasons why there is so much numbness. It's almost like brain doesn't know what is happening. And you know, you've made me realize now that I completely forgot about that. One of the main things which made a massive difference when I started working with my psychonutritionist was the fact that even in the beginning, I still have binge eating episodes, because within 2 weeks, you can't heal something what was happening for 25 years. But since my first call with her, I never had any binging episodes when I wouldn't remember them. Because it almost felt like when you start eating, you're just in a trance, and you just numb your emotions. So sometimes after 10 or 15 minutes, you just realize, oh my goodness, I've just eaten so much food. And you can just see the wrappers around you. But it's almost like you checked out for a moment. So that's something what was happening definitely in those
moments.
Do
you know why we do that? Like, why is it that part of the brain is almost numb, or like you said, it's a trance? What goes on there?
Introducing our exclusive newsletter, your weekly dose of inspiration, insights, and empowerment. Each week, we deliver curated content straight to your inbox. And this is designed to help you navigate life's challenges and thrive. Join our community of like-minded individuals who are committed to personal growth and self-discovery. Subscribe now to start your journey towards a happier, more fulfilling life. Don't miss out.
I think a lot of different things would be happening. First one is the amount of, especially if we do it with processed food, is the amount of sugar, which is just, our blood is just flooded with so much sugar that it's like a little bit of a shock to the system. And it's one of the coping mechanisms as well. Because if we are not aware of what we are doing, then for a moment we just... Again, it's like we are turning our nervous system down, or we are switching it off for a moment. And if you don't feel the pain, if you don't feel that suffering which is happening on the physical level, then at least you don't have to think for a moment. And that's basically what happens. That's the goal of that, because there is so much psychological suffering that the brain is, okay, we need to survive this. If we need to survive this, then we need to switch the thinking off, because otherwise there will be too much reaction happening as well.
So, I just think our bodies are so powerful, aren't they? They're so, and how we adapt and how we strive for survival to a point where it can become detrimental to our psychological health, our mental health, but we get caught in these patterns.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? It's really beautiful what you just said, that, you know, our body is always working for us or working with us. It's not that it's working against us. And I think this is a big paradox, which a lot of my clients, and when I have conversations with people who struggle with weight or struggle with binge eating or overeating, it's almost everyone says that it feels like there is a fight. I'm in a constant battle with my body. But the reality is that the body is just giving some kind of messages. And just to give you one of the most powerful and one of my favorite ones, and that's actually an example from my life as well. We were talking about different beliefs a few minutes ago, that fear of being judged. And if we have a belief that we are afraid of being seen, and fear of being seen is really, really common. I think most of the population have it.
So I actually was talking to someone the other day. I'm just going to interrupt there, because I mentioned about, I asked a question about being truly seen. And he turned around and he said, what does that mean? So for those that aren't aware of what does being seen, because I say it quite like in conversation, but not everyone else gets it. And I think that's because of the bubble that we're in, where we say it all the time. So for those of them, or for those people that aren't aware of what does being seen actually mean?
It's telling telling our truth, but you can also ask, what does it mean to tell our truth? It's not being afraid of saying what, how we really feel or what we really think. And I'm not, I don't mean being mean to people, but it's putting ourselves first. Sometimes it's really hard, to put ourselves first, but it's, if a situation is happening all the time, it might be in the office or at work, that constantly there is a situation which is bothering us, or it might be one of the colleagues or a boss constantly having some requirements and we are not coping with those requirements very well, but we are not saying anything because we are afraid of being fired or we are afraid of being judged, then that's one of the situations. We are not being seen because we are afraid of saying how we really feel. We are afraid of saying that we struggle with something. Because, and that's a big conversation, because asking for help or admitting that we struggle with something, it has that that theme around it, that if we say something like that, then it means that we are weak. But the reality is that it needs to start somewhere, because one of the really common situations is that if we don't see ourselves, if we don't look after ourselves, because seeing ourselves is also looking after our needs and looking after our bodies. Sometimes our bodies will be growing, and they will be growing even if we eat not too much. They will be growing because, first of all, If our subconscious belief is that I'm afraid of being seen who I really am, our body is like, okay, let me help you. The only way our body can help us is through the fat tissue. So if the body is growing bigger, then we can almost use it as a shield, as a safety net, and we can hide behind it. And this is the example from my own experience, that the moment when I started actually learning about emotions, I started setting boundaries. I started saying to people when I feel uncomfortable, and most importantly, in my situation, I started talking about the fact that I struggled with binge eating for so many years. My body started changing as well. It almost felt like I don't need that shield. I don't need that protection anymore, and it started shrinking. So that's one of the scenarios. And also, a lot of moms are telling me that because their families are always more important than them, so they always look after kids, after husbands, after parents, and then sometimes they have those situations that they pass the mirror, and it's like all of a sudden they just realize that what happened to them. Is it like, when did I get that big, or when did I get neglected? Because that's the thing. And I'm working currently with a client who literally, she shared that story, that she was so confused in her marriage that at some point she was looking at the pictures. They went out to a family party, and she was looking at the pictures, and she was literally not recognizing herself. And she had that awakening moment that, what happened to me? It's like, I don't look like myself. And those are the moments when we can see that, okay, our body is just trying to tell us something. It's like sending the message, just look at yourself. Just look at yourself, because I'm here to work with you, not against you.
Isn't that so fascinating that your body and mind are trying to work together, but sometimes we don't know how to communicate with the body, and there's things going on in our everyday life, but we learn to cope by disconnecting from those emotions because we don't know how to regulate our emotions. We don't know how to sit in our emotions. So we're very just disconnected. And people, I know that people in the therapy space, they come and they'll say that, I don't know who I am. I feel quite lost. I feel quite isolated. And that makes sense to why people feel that way. And even just going back to your story, I think what you shared was so powerful. The sort of like the light bulb moment that you received, where you started to understand, that's why I had this shield around me, this like literal shield around me, because I was trying to protect myself. And it helped you to make sense of why you had adapted in that way, but why you were also surviving in that way. And it's when you start to make sense of these things, that's when you can start making changes, because you've finally closed the loop to understand, I get now why that's been happening. And that's where you can then move forward more consciously, more intently, because you get it, you understand it.
Absolutely. And you know what, I will give you the example, which I'm sure that a lot of listeners might be able to resonate, or they might know someone who might resonate with that example. Is most of us, we come from dysfunctional families, because it doesn't matter if our parents had any particular addiction, or if they were emotionally unavailable, as we like to say, or if they just hid their emotions, or you know, every time when they were really quiet, and the only time when they were talking, they were just expressing a lot of anger. So most of the population, we grew up in those environments, and we just adapted those unhealthy ways of dealing with stress from our parents, which is absolutely natural. They did the best they could with what they had. But the reality is that those coping mechanisms, our subconscious brain just took them and started operating like that. And if we experience the situations in our childhood that we didn't feel safe, and I'm not talking only about physical safe, but we didn't feel safe because we weren't understood, or you know, no one ever listened to us, it will be the case that our body will be building that safety net until the moment we start doing the work on ourselves and we start feeling safe and secure within ourselves. Or the other option is, if it happens mostly to women, however, I've seen cases with men as well, if we experience any kind of abusive relationship, especially when we are teenagers or in our 20s, and it didn't have to be physical abuse, it might have been emotional or mental abuse, our body changes, because it felt almost like, and I've heard it from a number of clients when they were saying, the moment I left that relationship, I started dropping weight. And then what happened, because they didn't manage to heal that wound internally, and they still felt unsafe in a relationship, every time when they were starting another relationship, all of a sudden they were putting the weight on. And I had three examples when ladies actually realized that, and just having the awareness of that situation and working with themselves and you know, almost like confirming and repeating that I'm safe, I'm safe, I'm safe, it really helped to just shed the weight. And they were just mind blown, because all of a sudden they stopped snacking. Because they realized that the reason why they were snacking, it was the body sending the information, I'm not safe in that situation, so I need a little bit more fat tissue around. And they stopped snacking and they started just dropping weight. So
Anna,
I love
the
to
work
say
that you do is so beautiful. Like, just being able to hold space for people to be your unconditional self, where you're just there, you're just wanting to help them and make sense of what's going on for them. And I wonder, like, if when you're seeing clients and you see them making sense of things, what comes up for you? What happens to you?
Oh, you know what? I think I said it the other day to someone when they asked me, okay, so why did you decide to, you know, after 10 years, leave your career in financial services? And I said and I've been saying this before as well, that there is no comparison when you work with someone who all of a sudden can not only walk out of that prison, like food prison, but they can actually, throughout the work which we are doing, they can create their own key, open the gate and just walk out of that prison. And I've got goosebumps now when I'm saying this, because I remember that moment when I realized that life is about so much more than just food and how my body looks like. And now when I can guide my clients through the same journey of healing their relationships with body and with food, It's just one of the best feelings. It feels like the fulfillment. This is what it is.
Because when life is so much more than food. And what else was the last bit you said? Life is so much more than food. You said something else which was so beautiful.
Yes, it's the life is so much more than just food and what my body looks like or how my body looks like.
That because it feels like that is what you're giving other people. That's what you're helping other people to realize, because that's what they have. They're stuck in that pattern of no food and no my body and no food. But that's all external, because there's so much more underneath all of that that's going on.
Absolutely. And the thing is that, you know, I remember, I was 34 when I started working with my psychonutritionist. So I think it was around in my early 30s. I spent most of my life as a single person because I was literally, I said to someone that I was more in love with Ben and Jerry than I was in love with my friends or my family or any kind of partner. I was just hiding. Because being on my own, living on my own, I had that space when I could just come back home and eat. Even if I absolutely disliked the fact that I can't control it, at least I had that that for me. And I remember it was in my early 30s when I was convinced that I'm going to do it until the end of my days. It felt like binge eating was my middle name. My name wasn't Anna Strzok. It was Anna Binge Eating Strzok, and no one actually knew about it. And then within a few months, realizing that, wow, so I can do different things. I can focus on different things. And the most incredible thing which happened, and there is a research confirming that, that's why I want to give that example, and I'm sure that it will resonate with a lot of people as well. When someone has a healthy relationship with food, thinking about what we want to eat, how we look, what we, you know, thinking about shopping, about preparing meals, takes around 20 to 25% of our internal capacity. So what we think about during the day. The other 75 to 80% is work, family, hobbies, holidays. We can focus on whatever we want to and everyday life. If someone has unhealthy relationship with food and with their bodies, those thoughts about food, bodies, exercise, punishment, etc., take up to 85% of our daily capacity.
85%. That's huge. And if you think of like your day, if you think of your day and everything that you're going through, and to be fair, I've spoken to clients as well where they've told me, they're like, right, I'm sitting here and I'm talking to you, but my brain is thinking about something else. It's thinking about what I'm going to eat, or I'm on the train, I'm walking. It's food. What next? What am I going to eat next? What am I going to buy next? So I can imagine just how overwhelming and how normal that may be for some people.
Yeah, that's the thing is, you know, it's canceling holidays, canceling parties with friends because we are too, and I was example for that for many years as well, being afraid of being judged because in my head, I know that I put 5 kilograms on, but in my head is like, I'm looking really, really terrible. And also, and again, I was an example and I work with a lot of clients who absolutely loved beach holidays and loved going to the seafront, but they would always go to the mountains or they would go elsewhere because they were just ashamed of being on the beach, or they would always put clothes when they were on the beach because there is so much fear and so much shame around the body. So one of the best things, and normally it happens within between week 3 and week 6 on the program, levels of shame and guilt go down because of we are in the environment which is really supportive. And all of a sudden, you don't think about food that often. And I had so many clients who were saying to me, it's like, Anna, what am I supposed to do with all this time when I don't think about food? Because now it feels like, I remember that feeling for me, I felt like I had additional energetical hand that I can just do so many things. And for me, this is freedom. For me, this is the the biggest gift of that journey of healing relationship.
But it's also the how-to as well, isn't it, Hannah? Because what can end up happening is we are so focused on not being able to regulate our emotions. And I'm also have experienced this where I didn't understand that I couldn't manage my emotions in a different way. And it's only when you start working with someone, and I remember going to my therapist and trying to understand what's going on and why I do what I do. But it's only through having that safe place I was able to understand. And I think there's a real power when someone who is coming from their heart, their own experiences, and they want the best for you. And they are saying, right, let me just sit down and really sit with you. Let me really see you, not see what you're presenting with, not see the relationship with food, but let's go beyond that. And when you understand, okay, I'm feeling shame. When I feel shame, this is what I do. When I feel guilt, this is what I'm doing. When I feel like I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy, I'm not deserving, and you have these underlying beliefs, and then you are regulating them in a way where you're hurting yourself, or we go to something that we don't know there's another way. So when you start working with someone and they show you another way, it's so powerful because it gives you a different path and it allows you to look at the world in a very different way, but to help you thrive.
Yeah. And you know, that's why I love the saying that it's about healing. It's not about fixing, because that's also one of the things when it comes to psychonutrition. I keep saying that psychonutrition is the bridge between psychology and nutrition, because a lot of my clients, they come to me saying, oh, I've done so many different courses and I've been working with nutritionists or dietitians and I just can't get the long-term results or sustainable results. And
why? What do they struggle with? Why is it that they don't get the results that they want?
Because of the fact that when I do my work, I focus on all the aspects. So I love to give that example that you've got thoughts and feelings, which is your subconscious and conscious mind, your identity. You've got the actions and you've got the results. So you can change your actions. You can go to the gym, completely change your diet. You can start doing different things and you will be getting different results. But if your mindset, if your thoughts and feelings are still deep inside saying that you are always the person who keeps trying to lose weight, everyone else will get awesome results, not me. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure if it's going to work for me because it never worked for me in the past. If those thoughts and those feelings are still there, you will sooner or later bounce back. So what we focus on that mindset and on that, on those feelings behind. Because the combination, you mentioned the body-mind connection, and this is part which we work on the program as well, because thoughts are the language of our mind. And feelings are the language of our bodies, or emotions are the language of our bodies. And that's the reason why it's so important to do the body-mind connection, because your emotions are stored in your body. To give a good example, our liver is the place where a lot of anger is stored. So sometimes when we feel angry, we feel that our stomach is like, it's almost like a stone. And sometimes it's really easy to confuse that as well. We feel anger and we feel that we're hungry and we want to eat, or we can't eat at all when we are nervous. And the only way to release the emotions and that tension from our body is through different processing, through journaling, through movement. Crying is an incredible way to process. But for some reason, we think that we can outthink our emotions, or we can literally think our emotions. If I feel sad, I will think about it a lot and I will stop feeling sad. And it's not the way it is. So we need that connection between, okay, how do I feel? What thoughts do I have? And where do I feel it in my body? And the moment we get that connection, we just release a lot of emotions. And this is something what really, really helps in that journey of healing as well.
So, yeah. I really like the idea of mind body. I think we can internalize things all day long, internalize and say, yeah, I understand this, I get this. but we have to also embody it. We have to feel it. And that's something I've been on in my journey. I intellectualized it all, understood it. And I was like, yeah, I get this and I understand this, but why is this happening? And it's like, yeah, we need to surrender to the feel. I was like, what does that even mean? How do we feel this? And what do we need to do? And it's quite a journey, but it's about patience. That's one of the biggest lessons I learned. And also taking that first step to keep going and being consistent with trying to understand. So the journaling, all these different tools that you can have. And Anna, when you said you started your journey, what made you take that step into starting your journey, wanting to understand yourself more?
To be perfectly honest, I think three things happened at the similar time. My dad passed away 5 years ago. And I never had a very good relationship with him. He had his own journey with alcohol. And it was really interesting because I never realized that I was blaming him for lots of things in my life. And I remember it was a year after he passed away. I realized that he's not here anymore, but I still blame him for lots of things. And that was for me, that was like, okay, so maybe it's time to look at myself. Maybe it's time to see what is happening inside. And it was on Instagram, actually. I saw the story from the psychonutritionist who I literally started. No, I wasn't following her. Someone shared the story from a psychonutritionist, and she said, if you've tried everything and nothing worked, try my program. We've got nothing to lose. And I saw it and I was like, yeah, I tried everything. Nothing worked. Long time. Okay, I've got nothing to lose. And I started following her, and literally I started her program, I think, within a week. And she became my psychonutritionist. And now, a few years later, we are really good friends and we are actually working together as well. And this is how it started. And around this similar time, I started my self-growth journey. I met my first coach as well. And I just got fascinated by self-growth, by the concept of the inner child, the concept of the fact that, you know, there is a mind which keeps saying different things, but we don't have to listen to it all the time. So I think it was those few things, but I was just ready. And I think most importantly, I was just fed up with the fact that I have no idea what to do. And I've tried everything and I'm just too tired to try another diet. And someone who came and showed me a completely different approach, it was a lifesaver. I had nothing to lose, definitely. But
when you're saying for me and coming from a psychologist perspective and trying to understand that relationship with dad, and you mentioned it wasn't always a good relationship and dad had a drink problem. So sometimes we can learn things from our parents, but also there's that safety, that security, that attachment figure and what they represent and them not being there and bringing up feelings of rejection or abandonment and how that plays out in our relationship with food. And although we're here talking about food comes from so many different things that we may have gone through, and food being that consistent, food being that thing that's always been there to comfort us, to be present, to make it all better in a few seconds, even though it may last for a few seconds, it's always been there. And I wonder if that's what you unraveled and started to learn more about in your self-growth journeys, like going deeper into your inner child, learning about where these beliefs and what beliefs you may have held around there around of not being good enough, not being worthy, not being deserving, and how that then played out with food.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what, I keep saying that I'm still on my journey, and I believe that, you know, we are lifetime learners and we can always get a little bit deeper and deeper. And definitely that belief that I'm not good enough, so I need to do a lot of different things. I need to prove someone that, you know, I'm worthy of anything. And that was also showing in perfectionist, in overachieving in my corporate role. And it almost felt like if I know that 2%, 100 out of 100% of, you know, 100% is the total me, if I knew that I didn't do 2% of something, or I was doing, I had a task to do at work and I've done everything, but I wasn't 100% sure about 2% of what I've done, I would automatically deliver 300% just to make sure that no one notices those 2%, which I wasn't sure about. And it's exactly the same with not feeling good enough. If we don't feel good enough, then we will over-deliver just to make sure that no one notices that small part, which we are the only people who focus on. So yeah, I discovered lots of different patterns. And I need to tell you about one which was the most shocking for me. And I discovered it probably around 2 years into my, or a year into my journey. Because I was aware of the fact that, okay, my dads have a problem with addiction with alcohol, so I'm addicted to food. Fair enough. It's good that I didn't choose alcohol or anything else. But the biggest paradox was that even if consciously I knew that I didn't want to follow his journey, I didn't want to be addicted as he was, and I didn't want to eat a lot because it was doing a lot of bad things to my body, subconsciously, it felt that I had that connection with him, that if I'm also addicted to something, then it confirms that I'm his daughter. So it's almost like that silent agreement with a parent that, okay, I'm doing things exactly the same way you were doing, even if they materialize in a different way. And that confirms that we've got that connection. And when I realized that, it was like, whoa, this is one of the biggest sabotaging patterns ever. Because it's, you know, to confirm that connection with my dad, or with our connection with parents, we don't need to do those things.
Yeah. And the thing is, that all happens at a subconscious level as well. So that is all happening until it doesn't come up and you don't look at it. That will just keep playing out and you will be like, I'm nothing like dad. I'm nothing like. And then when you actually face your shadows, and like you said, life is just a mirror version of us. Like when we start looking back and understanding things, we're like, oh my goodness, this is what's going on. And this is why this is. And there must be like a little girl within there who is just so feeling like so rejected and finding any way to try and connect. So in the therapy space, that's where we would dive straight into to try and understand what is it that's going on here, and how is this inner child learning to show up or to feel good enough in the world around her, and to hold on to these onto these sort of strings to make herself feel enough, even though these strings are hurting her. And it's then teaching her a new way of showing up and to feel deserving, to feel worthy, to feel enough. And often we think that's going to be from someone else, but your journey will tell you it's you. You are that person that needs to go back and really hold her and tell her that she's enough. And there's a real beautiful journey. And like you said, we never stop learning. There's always going to be new lessons, new triggers, new things that come up. But we have the tools. That's the difference. We have the tools to be able to help us manage the emotions.
Absolutely. And you know what, it's so beautiful what you said regarding the inner child as well. And I came up with this metaphor some time ago, and it almost feels, when it comes to the journey with our bodies, and especially if we are challenged by a much bigger body and we want to do something about it, it almost feels like one of the Transformers. That there is a person, there is that little girl or little boy sitting inside, and there is that body which is really big, because the impression is that bigger I am, the bigger I am, the stronger I am, the more independent I can be, the safer I am. And it's just so the other way around. It's about opening that transformer. The transformer is about finding that little person inside and just healing that person. And that's why healing the relationship with food and healing the relationship with ourselves is almost the same, because I keep saying that our relationship with food is a mirror reflection of our relationship with ourselves, because the way we operate with food, this is how we operate in our life. This is something what I realized when I realized that I was hiding when I was eating food, or I was hiding with food, I started asking myself question, okay, so where else in my life do I hide? what else am I trying to hide from the view? So it's just, yeah, that's why this journey is so powerful and so many mirrors.
It's fascinating, isn't it? I remember thinking, and I remember going into when I first started yoga years ago, and the yoga teacher, she said, she was like, the mat is a reflection of you. And I wanted to go onto the mat. I just wanted to quickly do the work. And it's like, right, that's really interesting. I want to quickly get on and do this. And what's that about? Why is it that I have to go fast onto the next thing? And it's like learning to sit in your body and learning to be in your body. So it's almost like the world around us is a reflection, or it's a mirror reflection of what's going on within us. And it feels like you use that same thing with understanding that relationship with food is, okay, if I'm doing this with food, what's that really about? What's really going on behind the scenes? What is this mirroring back to me to help me make sense of this relationship here?
Yeah, you said it so beautifully, and it's always about just reflecting, about learning a little bit more, and just seeing, just asking a question: what is really happening? And the question which I love to ask, and this is something for anyone who's listening as well: if we are really in that moment that we don't know what is happening, we have no idea why we are eating, we don't know where we are in our life. When we eat, just let's ask ourselves a question: am I punishing myself with this, or am I nourishing myself with this? Because deep inside, we will know the answer to that question, and we can relate it to everything else, like you said, regarding yoga, exercise, or anything else what we do, because we love to punish ourselves. Or actually, it's not us. What I keep saying is our mind loves to punish our body for its own choices. Because thinking happens in our mind, but the body is the one which is taking a hit sometimes. So it's just about changing it to nourishing a little bit more. And I love the fact that we are talking about it. We are having this conversation in February, because it is a month of self-love and self-care. So if we can just add a little bit more self-love and a little bit more self-care to our days, then life will be completely different after some time.
Thank you, Anna. And if people wanted to get in contact with you, because I know you have Feed Your Body, Not Your Mind. It's a course, isn't it? So you have a course. So if people wanted to get in contact with you to just find out more about the course, how do they do that?
The best option will be to find me or on Instagram. So I actually have two accounts. One is for the program, Feed Your Body, Not Your Mind. You will find it on Instagram. And the other one is myself. So it's anna.strozek, which is Strozek. And you can DM me, you can follow me. I add a lot of content over there. And also when you find me on social media, you will have access to different social media like LinkedIn or Facebook. And I do have a website as well, but I think the best option will be if I just give you the website, and then you can put it in the description of the episode. And then
so if anyone wants to know more information about Anna, it'll be somewhere along here. So it'll be underneath, or it'll be somewhere, but it'll be with this video. So Anna, thank you so much. Now, before we end, we always ask one question, and it's not something I prepped you for. So this one question is, do you feel that life is fair?
Oh, I love this question. Now, yes. But in the past, I didn't feel like it was. And I think the reason why is just the moment we start understand what is happening within ourselves, we start taking responsibility. And when we start taking responsibility, we can understand that every single thing we do in our life is actually our decision, and we do have choice, even if it seems that we don't have a choice. Because every time when we just not react to something, we just decide not to do something. So if we start looking at the lessons and everything what is happening, then we start seeing the beauty. And I know that for a lot of people it might sound very optimistic, because all of us, we are challenged by a lot of different things. But I do believe that when we learn how to change the perspective, then we can understand that life is actually fair.
Thank you. Okay. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. So and we will connect after this.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much, Lalitha. Thank you, everyone.
Hey there. Are you ready to take your personal growth journey to the next level? I'm really excited to announce that my new online course is finally here. And in this course, we deep dive into topics we explore on this podcast, but with even more in-depth lessons, practical exercises, and personalized guidance. Don't miss out on this opportunity to invest in yourself and unlock your full potential. Enroll now and join me on this life-changing journey.